The Adonis Audio Experience. In order for something to be unique, it has to be rare. It's something that's truly profound. It's scarce. It's exclusive. When it comes to the Hall of Fame, I always think about what matters most. Is it all about the stats you accumulate throughout your career? Is it based on the impact you had during your prime years? Were you an ambassador for the game? Was there some international acclaim to fame that you had? Or is it just purely based on your ability to dominate the field when the competition is tough and the margin for error is pretty slim? When we talk about the Hall of Fame, regardless of the sport, we talk about the numbers. How many hits did you get? How many touchdowns did you score? How many MVPs did you take home? And of course, were you a champion? Some players are fortunate enough to play on good teams and showcase their talents in opportunistic clutch moments. Other players are outstanding stars but never get to experience team victory. Should that hurt a player's nomination? Should it matter whether you play in a small market or big city? Do we take into consideration the coaches you had? And of course, your teammates. I think we should also consider the era and the level of competition you played. I think it's important to analyze the rules as well, because the rules of the game can impact the player's production. For example, in the NFL, no longer can a quarterback get blindsided hits and forget about someone getting crushed in the middle of the field. So what ends up happening? Offensive production goes up. In the NFL, so much is measured on winning, probably more so than any other sport. A lot of players can get overlooked because they were on bad teams. But if you were average or good on a great team, you may get looked at as a Hall of Famer, especially if you were good during those clutch moments in the postseason. And some players get a nod simply because they were at the right place at the right time. When you talk about the Hall of Fame in the NFL, I guess it all comes down to the numbers and the team success, meaning championships. The classic example I always use is Eli Manning. Is he a Hall of Famer? Some say of course. In particular, Giant fans. They say, of course he's a Hall of Famer. He beat Tom Brady twice in the Super Bowl. I guess you can be right about that assessment, but what if Eli did not play in any Super Bowls? Are his numbers enough to justify the Hall of Fame? When you look at his numbers, they are pretty average. Yes, I get it. He's top 10 in passing yards. But in a pass-friendly league, to me, that's not that impressive. He is 20,000 yards less than Drew Brees and Tom Brady, who are his contemporaries and also benefited from the change in the rules. But, I mean, how do you explain the simple fact that Joe Montana has 40,000 passing yards and 4 Super Bowls, and Eli Manning has 57,000 passing yards and 2 Super Bowls? Are we going to compare Eli Manning to Joe Montana now? Of course not. That would be crazy. But clearly, in the NFL, championships are weighed heavily in the Hall of Fame process. So if you look at that example of Eli Manning, yes, he benefited from the rules. And yes, he has 57,000 passing yards, which puts him in the top 10. But he's 20,000 yards behind 2 other players who played in his era. So it's obvious that compared to the level of competition in his era, he just wasn't top notch. He wasn't the greatest. In thinking about that example, I figure we dig a little deeper. How about wide receiver of the Denver Broncos, Rod Smith? Rod Smith went undrafted and signed with the Denver Broncos as a walk-on. He made a huge impact on the franchise as the starting wide receiver in those John Elway-led Bronco championships in the late 90s. Rod Smith holds 11 franchise records in receptions, yards, touchdowns, all-purpose yards, and eventually he was inducted into the Broncos Ring of Honor in 2012. He clearly has better statistics than many receivers who are currently in the Hall of Fame and won two Super Bowls, which he recorded over 150 yards in one of them. Yet, when it comes to the NFL Pro Football Hall of Fame, he's consistently overlooked. If the Hall of Fame were truly about having a profound impact on the game, wouldn't Rod Smith's career exemplify that? But then again, he doesn't have the pedigree or the name brand as someone like Eli Manning. Which, in my opinion, I do think that those intangibles are taken into consideration when writers are voting someone in. Yes, it's impact. Yes, it's statistics. And yes, it's likability and name recognition. Then we look at the NBA. Andre Iguodala, who came up through the ranks as a small forward with the 76ers and then was traded to the Golden State Warriors. He was nominated once to an All-Star game and never qualified for the All-NBA list. But yet, he did win the 2015 championships as a sixth man coming off the bench and was named the MVP of the finals. One could argue that without Iguodala, there is no way they beat LeBron and the Cleveland Cavaliers in the NBA Finals. But is Iguodala a Hall of Famer? You'd have to compare his statistical numbers and match them up with other players in his generation. I mean, he played in an era of LeBron James, Kevin Durant, and no one in their right mind would compare Iguodala to those guys. And his numbers individually just don't scream Hall of Fame. He did have that playoff run where he completely dominated both sides of the ball, but he was coming off the bench. But what if I were to tell you players like Vlade Divac and Arvydas Sabonis are in the Hall of Fame? Yeah, I know what you're thinking. Who are those guys? I mean, I get the fact that the NBA is looking to grow the game of basketball internationally, but it just waters down the prestige of the Hall of Fame when players like that are in it. When I think about great centers in that era, what comes to mind are Patrick Ewing, Shaquille O'Neal, Hakeem the Dream Olajuwon, David Robinson, not Vlade Divac, who was consistently pummeled by Shaq when the Kings had to face the Lakers. One could say that he wasn't even the best player on his team. Chris Webber was, and Webber isn't in the Hall of Fame. What about guys like Vince Carter? Does he belong in the Hall of Fame? I mean, he had those 12 dominant years with the Toronto Raptors, averaging 27 points a game, and was extremely popular. He had nicknames like Vince Sanity, Half Man, Half Amazing, and, of course, Air Canada. But would you compare Vince Carter to Dr. J, who won 4 league MVPs and a championship? Compare that to Vince Carter, who has yet to be a champion. Was Vince Carter as good as Larry Bird, who won 3 MVPs during a time where the league had Magic Johnson and Michael Jordan in their prime? Based on the criteria of having a profound impact on the game, I would say that his chances are borderline. But the NBA has proven that they will vote you based on popularity and, yeah, statistics, and tenure, even if you weren't a champion. Then we have baseball, who has always been mired in controversy. 3,000 hits is normally the benchmark where all position players are measured against. All hitters are viewed to be great if they can achieve this milestone. As of this recording, 32 players have reached this milestone in baseball history. But what will happen when 100 players reach this milestone? Will it still be a benchmark of how you measure a great hitter? Also, consider this. Pete Rose has over 4,200 hits in 9,600 at-bats, and he did it around 2,400 games played. Derek Jeter, on the other hand, who I love, has 3,400 hits in the same number of at-bats and roughly the same amount of games played. So, if a player has done it already and clearly dominated at a higher level, is 3,000 hits really that special? Maybe it is. I mean, I think so. I mean, we are talking about Derek Jeter, who's one of the greatest hitters of all time. And not to mention, he is Mr. November. But my point is that you could put up an argument that he wasn't even the best player on his own team. And during his career, it was often viewed that he wasn't the number one shortstop for his position. There were others who were better defensively. There were other potential better hitters, and especially when it came to home runs. So when you look at Derek Jeter's career, yes, he was great. Yes, he had those clutch moments, but he was also on great teams, which helps greatly. And lastly, and I'll leave you with this, is likability. When you are beloved by a franchise, which you've spent 20 years playing for, it just looks a little different when your time comes to be voted into the Hall of Fame. Sorry, Pete. And so much emphasis is put on how you play the game. Cheating in baseball is absolutely not tolerated. But look at the steroid era. We knew these players were juicing when we saw Mark McGwire's pythons picking up a toothpick, which was supposed to represent a baseball bat. Then you have Sammy Sosa, who went from a skinny, dicey hitter to one of the greatest home run hitters in Major League history. The league celebrated them, but then word got out in mainstream media that many players were juicing, so they created a ban on players that arguably would have been Hall of Famers before the juicing scandal. Especially when you look at players like Barry Bonds, who had three league MVPs before juicing scandals. Roger Clemens, who won seven Cy Youngs. And Alex Rodriguez, who made the 40-40 club as a shortstop at the age of 19. But baseball has this complex where it becomes the righteous judge and jury. I mean, you didn't stop it when you knew this was happening in real time. Yet, to save face, you are willing to punish these great athletes for a lifetime. I mean, look at Pete Rose. He's being punished for something he did as a manager, not a player, when he bet on baseball. Yet, he's not in the Hall of Fame, even though his numbers will never be duplicated in the history of the game. Baseball has always been a walking contradiction. Look at today's game. Instead of juicing the players, we juice the balls now. To me, the Hall of Fame is a marketing tool to promote the game. It ensures that the history of the game remains intact. But for a Hall of Fame to be true in nature, meaning that only the best of that era are selected, then it has to be redefined. How is it that the same standards apply to a player that played in the 1940s compared to 2015? So many things have changed since that point, which is why tenure and cumulative stats cannot be qualifiers that get certain players into the hall. Greatness should be measured by your profound impact on the game. Profound being the operative word. In football, for example, the game is less physical today, so the rules are made to promote more offense, which means the impact on defensive players are different compared to the hard-hitting backs of the 80s. So how are you going to judge defensive guys today? The same goes for the NBA. There are more teams, more focus on shooting, with less centers playing in the NBA. It's catered to wing players now and guys that shoot the three-point shot. There was a time in the NBA where they didn't even have a three-point shot. So how did you judge a guy who averaged 30 points a game in the 60s versus to a player today? Which is why impact in their era means so much. However, in today's game, one could say that the competition is tougher. Players are more athletic, and there's more of a focus on longevity. But you can also say that the game is watered down because additional teams have been added throughout time, so the talent pool is more spread out. There are so many factors to consider, which is why I truly believe the Hall of Fame should represent the most impactful players for that time in that era. Meaning that if Michael Jordan is the best shooting guard of his era, then there's really no room for any other shooting guards. Meaning, guys like Mitch Richmond just won't make the cut. To me, the Hall of Fame is giving notoriety to a player that dominated his sport for his position in that era. But if it's purely a marketing tool to grow the game and it's just a ceremony for good players and great players, but not guys who are one of a kind, one of one, then yeah. Players who accumulated good stats over time deserve to get in if that's the objective. But when I think about the Hall of Fame, I think about this. Names like Babe Ruth, Joe DiMaggio, Barry Sanders, Deion Sanders, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Bill Russell, those guys, they all scream out because you know that it was clear cut that they're Hall of Famers. They had the greatest impact in their sport in that era. When you think about inducting a player into the Hall of Fame, it should be obvious. There's no ambiguity. Was this person the best at that time or not? But ultimately, the Hall of Fame process is subjective. It heavily relies on player stats and other intangibles such as likability. Some players were likable but never won anything, and though they were great players or really, really good, they weren't the best at their position for their generation. Look at Carmelo Anthony, for example. He is a prolific scorer. In fact, he's one of the best scorers the NBA has ever seen, but he never won. And one could argue that he was never the best small forward at the time, especially when you look at guys like Kevin Durant or LeBron James. But something tells me that he will get nominated to the Hall of Fame, even though he clearly wasn't as good as those players, simply because his stats compared to historical data in the NBA shows that he should at least be considered in the Hall of Fame. And there lies the rub.